Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
The following podcast of The Bench is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right. Deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code BENCH101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com. Use promo code BENCH101.
ESPN 97.5.
Good name. Totally fits.
A Gao Media Station. KFC, Mont Bellevue, Houston. This is The Bench. The Bench. On ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Whatever your mountain, climb on. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Welcome into a rousing Friday morning on the bench. I'm Jermaine Every, that's Craig Koshkin, beautiful Andrew on the boards. We're filling in for John Lance and Dell. It's our last day together, guys, so let's make it a good one, okay?
I mean, I guess. If we have to, we'll make it a good one.
No, we have to.
Okay, let's we make it a good to. One. Okay, well, I mean, if that is a directive, I mean, I'm not taking my orders from you, but if Jong or anyone else wants us to do well, I mean, I'll give you my A game.
I'll put it to you like this. The ratings book came out. The bench was ranked third.
It was. That's true.
So I feel like we have to live up to that.
And we've got a bit of an audience if that's the case. Or Everyone knows that it's Christmas week and most of the people aren't gone, so they decided not to tune in. I hope that's not the case.
And if you are one of those people who are not tuning in,
shame on you.
Back on this, screw you.
Shame on you. Where is the Game of Thrones shame bell when you need it?
Exactly. We could really use that one right about now. Anyway, so let's dive right into it. Last night, your Houston Rockets defeated the Boston Celtics 127-113.
And that sound you hear is the collective groan of NBA Twitter because James Harden went to the free throw line 17 times.
And, you know, here's the thing. Aggression gets you to the free throw line. Yes, flopping and flailing can help you get there as well, but aggression helps you get there.
I saw someone complain last night that he took 18 threes. Needless to say, he hit half of them. He shot 9 of 18 from the three-point line. I mean, I don't know about you, but if I've got a three-point shooter shooting 50%, who cares how many he takes?
I'd let him jack up 20 to 30 a game if he's going to hit 50% of them.
People are going to complain regardless because it's James Harden, but 41 of his 45 points came either from the three-point line or the free throw line. He went 14 of 17 from three, and he had 27 points on 9 3-point. I mean, 14 of 17 from the free throw line, and he had 27 points on 9 3-pointers.
There's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with that. That's the way they play the game.
It's the Rockets' philosophy.
Threes and freeze. Threes and freeze.
Well, and layups.
And layups. But, you know, the thing that I love the most is that when you watch James Harden, you know he's going to go left. You know he can get to the rim on anybody that's guarding him. It's up to the team that's defending him to not foul him.
or not give up an easy bucket, or force him to kick the ball out, or just play sound defense
close
in
out
general.
Double team him.
Yeah, either way. And then the other thing is on a lot of those threes, a lot of those step backs, he just sits there for 20 seconds of the shot clock, rocking the ball back and forth, dribbling his defender into a false sense of security till he goes flat-footed, step back three.
Exactly, especially when the pick and roll, they're not really playing the pick and roll the way he wants it to be played. He'll call it off, back out, step back up, rock him to sleep, step back three-pointer. That play happens plenty of times. You know what the Rockets are going to do. You know what's coming, yet and still, other teams can't seem to stop it.
No, and I mean, I sometimes get why people think he's hard to watch, because yes, he does kill the clock a little bit with that just dribbling out, isolation ball, the occasional pick and roll. I get how he can be frustrating to watch, but I don't get how he's not appreciated for his skill set.
It's amazing to me that people still don't take it's like appreciating greatness when you see it. A lot of the times people don't appreciate certain players or certain talents that certain players have until that player is gone, retired, and they're looking back at his career.
Well, and let's be honest. Part of it is the social media age that we live in, where everybody is a miserable person because no one can be happy for any reason. Look, we have spent a good portion of LeBron James's career just talking about how he can't be the GOAT, or that he can be the GOAT compared to Michael Jordan, instead of just valuing his career for what it's been, the best of his era, and the most unique mix of size, skill, and athletic ability we've ever seen in the NBA.
Yeah, I wrote an article, I believe, a while back on SportsMap about that, just appreciating the greatness that we have in front of us sometimes. Instead of worrying about, well, Jose Altuve had a quote-unquote down year. Hell, he still hit for 300. So what if he didn't hit 24 home runs again this year? So what if the Astros didn't win the World Series? They won 103 games.
I mean, of course you want them to win the World Series if you're an Astros fan. The funny thing is, it hasn't taken long for Astros fans to get spoiled in wanting to win. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Like,
oh, no, not at all.
Having standards, especially in the city of Houston, where a lot of woe is me goes around when things don't go your way, setting a championship standard is not a bad thing. And I don't want, when I say spoiled, someone's going to get offended out there. All I'm saying is I'm a little surprised, given how bad they were intentionally to build the team up, that kind of standard for at least the baseball team that plays its baseball in the city of Houston, the Astros, has come along. And it's a good thing. I wish that standard was more like the Rockets got to the Western Conference Finals and took the Warriors to a Game 7 last year. It's a great season. Yeah, it is a good season, but it still falls short of your goals. Yeah. And if you don't meet your goals, it's not a disaster of a season, but it is a bit of a failure of a season.
It is. And the thing is, the Astros set a new bar in Houston.
Yep, they won a championship.
They set a new bar in Houston. The Rockets and the Texans now have to live up to that. And the Astros seem like they're going to be in contention for World Series for years to come. And they're doing stuff that they're trying to make moves here, there to try to keep the pipeline going from the minor league system, but at the same time keep the major league team competitive without disabling the future of the franchise.
I think one of the most fantastic things the Astros have done to this point, I haven't loved their offseason this season, but one of the things they have done is they've managed to keep the top prospects in their farm system and not trade them away for one-off players, rentals, or anything that they may not be able to keep around, rather than develop these players and have them come up to the major leagues naturally and help out be key components of another championship run.
Now, one thing that I will look at, getting back to the Rockets from the game last night, is the Celtics still shot roughly right at 47%, 46.9%, and 38.7% from three. Those are averages that you don't want to see out of your team defense. However, their offense was so good, it just overpowered the Celtics.
And let's be honest, the Rockets' defense is a shell of what it was last year. I feel like the offense is finally coming around if they can ever get fully healthy this season. And I don't know that that's going to be the case. It's just maybe they're snake bitten. Early in the season, they're clearly snake bitten as far as the injury bug goes. But the offense is coming around. James Harden, during this stretch where he's averaging 39 a game, is just ridiculous. And it's hard to see how that's going to continue. Eventually, that's going to come back down to earth at around the, you know, the 30-point-a-game mark or something like that. But still, the team defense is just not going to play at the level that you want it to play because they set a ridiculous standard last year.
Right. And when you set an unbelievable standard, it's hard to live up to that. However, shout out to Austin Rivers. He's played really well for the Rockets in the two games since they've gotten
him. Did you just say something nice about Austin Rivers?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I said something nice about Austin Rivers. Take it right now because I'm just feeling
you're
nice
just waiting,
about it.
You're waiting for the first time you can say something not so nice about Austin Rivers? Look, he's played well. He's been a good addition in a season where additions to the Rockets team either haven't meshed well, Carmelo Anthony, shocking, or been hurt the whole time, Brandon Knight, or just aren't what the other pieces from last year were.
Michael Carter Williams.
Michael Carter. Come on, everyone can see Michael Carter Williams come from that. His shot fell off a cliff 2 years ago.
To me, I don't think he ever really had one. And when I saw that signing, it was head scratching at best.
Well, I mean, look, you get a lengthy defender who essentially takes an offensive part. You're playing 4-on-5 on offense when he's on the floor. But you get a lengthy defender, especially in crunch time. But you can't put a guy in you can't trust to play the other 40 minutes in the last 2 minutes.
Yeah, the thing is with Marquese Chriss, Brandon Knight, Michael Carter Williams, those are three roster spots. Those three guys specifically are guys that I wish could have been something different. Now, you offload Ryan Anderson's albatross of a contract, but yet you take back two pieces who are albatrosses themselves.
Yeah, and the other side of this is, as much as I didn't like Daryl Morey's offseason, the two big in-season moves that he's made, using Daniel House's two-way contract to bring him up and let him play, has been a boost in the arm of the Rockets. And Austin Rivers, through two games, it's a small sample size, has been a boost to the Rockets as well. So for any failures he may get flack for, failure is a strong word, but for anything that hasn't gone right in his offseason moves, has seemed to go right in the in-season moves. The question is, can they find a third piece to help them out? And I don't think they have the pieces to trade because there's no real salary dumps for the Rockets to get rid of to bad teams who just want to take on bad expiring contracts.
Oh, for sure. Now, don't forget about Gary Clark. He had his moments here and there, and I think he can develop into a decent rotational player, but let's not get carried away with saying that guy's going to be the next whatever, or he's not going to be your next Trevor Ariza. He's not going to be – he may not even be Luke Mbamute, but he, going forward, looks like he could develop into something that could be a rotational player.
The other thing I really didn't like in the offseason was I loved the draft of DeAnthony Melton and then trading him right away.
Yeah, get something for him while you can.
But I think he's a guy who maybe not this year, but there's plenty of guys not making an impact this year anyway on the roster, but in the foreseeable future could have made an impact. We'll see. He's got a long way to go in his career to develop, but that's my personal opinion on the subject.
Yeah, I think he could eventually be something because he has a ton of talent, a lot of raw athletic ability, but it's just going to be one of those things that kind of wait and see kind of something. And with players like that, they need time, and they need playing time on the court mainly, and he just wasn't going to get that here.
As bad as the Phoenix Suns are, and he'll get plenty of playing time in Phoenix, as bad as they are, the rumor mill is that they view him as a valuable piece for their future.
That's awesome for them. I hope that, you know, it pans out for them. The person I feel bad for in Phoenix is Devin Booker because he signed a huge max extension. There's not really much else around Devin Booker but
yeah,
himself.
But they're going to be like the Sixers. They keep picking at the top of the draft, and they eventually get it right. I mean, I don't think DeAndre Ayton's a bad pick.
Oh, no,
I
not
think
at
he
all.
Fits.
Not at all.
And if they keep picking at the top end, which they most certainly will be because they're terrible, eventually in the last 2 years of that contract, he's going to get some help.
A blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on the bench on ESPN 97.5 and Sports Map 94.1.
This one's for you, baby. You my everything. you all I ever wanted. We could do it real big, bigger than you ever done it. You be
this is The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Welcome back to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Jermaine Every, Craig Koshkin, Andrew Carlson filling in for John Lance and Dell. We're talking Rockets in the first segment, and didn't get to another great performance last night by another Rocket. Clint Capella, 24-18 last night.
That's pretty good.
Strong performance. Very strong performance. And what I like the most about watching Clint Capella play is that he got the big contract, but it almost seems like he's playing harder. And he actually worked better on his free throw shooting this past offseason. Last night, he was actually 6 out of 8 on his free throws.
I mean, I don't know if I can be. He had no assists, so I mean.
Yeah, he only had one block.
Poor game from Clint. I mean, if you can't rely on your center to get assists. And look at some of the greatest passing centers of all time. Vlade Divac, Arvydas Sabonis, Shaq. Shaq was a great passer out of the post.
Yeah, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Kareem. I need more. No, Clint had a really good game. I think the funniest moment of Clint's game last night was the ridiculous technical he got for hanging on the rim for about half a second. Literally maybe one full second of hanging on the rim. It is the quickest technical for hanging on the rim I've ever seen. And I don't know that I've seen it called in the NBA in a decade.
I've seen it called, but I mean, it's been way, way more obvious. Like guys just literally like doing a chin up on the rim or something like that.
I guess.
I've seen that. But I mean, just for what Capella did, that was ridiculous.
It was insane. Our colleague on the national side on SB Nation Radio, Jake Asman, put a side-by-side in a tweet last night that showed Clint Capella's dunking, hanging for a split second and dropping next to a LeBron James dunk earlier this season with the Lakers, to where he literally hung for at least 15 seconds and the refs just, you know, and I get it. Superstars versus good players are ref differently. We know this. It's the world we live in. But it was just, it was all, like, I can't describe it without you thinking it's hyperbole, how much longer LeBron James hung on the rim than Clint Capella.
It's another one of those things, like I've been talking about for quite a while now. Refs need to stop making themselves such a part of the action. Fans that paid to get tickets to go and see the game live, and fans that watch on TV, they're looking at the players. They're looking for the game. They're not looking for the guys with the zebra stripes on, or in the NBA's case, with the gray shirts on. We're not looking for you guys.
You know, the funny thing is, I was just about to ask you if the NBA refs have the biggest egos in professional sports, and the answer is no. Major League Baseball umpires
by a mile.
But I think NBA officials are worse at their jobs than Major League Baseball umpires.
I don't know, man, because with the different strike zones that some of these umpires have,
if they would just go to automated balls and strikes and let umps make calls on the field, that would go a long way to improving that for sure. Like, inconsistent strike zones are the worst. There was some study they did over 2 or 3 years where they looked at umps, and umpires got their strike zone wrong like 60% of the time.
Oh, wow.
Or so, I mean, it may not have been that much, but it may have been 40% of the time. And 60% they got it right, but it was a big number. Whereas they looked at strike zone technology, measuring the same strike zone against those umps, and got it wrong like 1/100th of a percent of the time.
And the thing is, we have so much technology available to us. Like soccer has the goal cam, football has the pylon cam.
And the goal line technology, much like the tennis line technology,
yes,
looks super fake, but it's incredibly accurate.
Incredibly. And I mean, chair umps in tennis rely on it religiously, and they have for quite a while now.
Well, there's a reason why players in tennis get like six challenges a match or something like that. They get a lot. They get a lot of challenges, and it's because if any fraction of the ball is touching any fraction of the line, it's in. And that's hard to see when you're sitting in the chair, especially across the court.
Well, not only that, but you got to think about the sun aspect if you're playing in one of those outdoor courts. You know, so
agreed.
You're shaded. The sun may be coming in at a funny angle, especially like I think it's the Australian Open or the U.S. Open. One of them has the retractable roof on the stadium, or both of them.
I think they both do.
And you know, when the sun is hitting at a certain angle, a certain part of the court is shaded, and a certain part of the court is like. Right, like underneath the sun. I mean,
we've seen how football players have enough trouble, like at Old Cowboy Stadium, tracking.
Oh my
from
God.
The sun
it
into
used to
the
be
shade.
The worst.
It was awful. So.
It was the worst. But there's just certain things that refs need to just calm down about in the NBA.
Not going
to
happen.
And unfortunately, it won't. One of the other things that I was talking to a buddy of mine about, I said, you know, unfortunately, and I know this may sound morbid, but. We're going to have to wait until some of these older veteran refs and umpires and whatnot retire, die off, whatever.
They're not going to. I mean, how old was Dick Bavetta before he eventually retired in the NBA?
175.
I mean, and it's sad that I even know who Dick Bavetta is. I shouldn't know who these officials are.
Joey Crawford.
No, Joey Crawford is. I hate the Spurs. Tim Duncan got ejected from a game for laughing on the bench.
Yeah.
If there is. A dictionary definition of butt hurt for an NBA official, it's Joey Crawford.
Oh, for sure.
In a landslide.
Easily. But getting back to the Rockets a little bit, one thing that I did hear on the broadcast was, and I watched the local broadcast, Kyrie and Harden exchanged back-to-back threes and people on Twitter and one of the broadcasters was like, oh, look at this back and forth by Kyrie and James Harden. Kyrie ended up with 23 points. Harden almost doubled his output. I hardly consider that a duel. Just because they hit back-to-back threes, like, come on, people, let's not get all exaggerated about it and say, oh, look at this duel. They're going back and forth. They hit back-to-back threes. That's about it.
And they're not going at each other. Directly.
No,
at any point in time.
Not at all. So, I mean, just the hyperbole there, people got all excited about it, and you see one little blip of a back and forth, quote unquote, with the two guys hitting back to back shots, and people got all up in arms about it. It was kind of crazy. Eric Gordon was in the starting lineup again last night due to the injury of Chris Paul. He had 20 points on 7 of 16 shooting. 2 out of 7 for 3, 4 or 5 from the three-point line. A free throw line, I'm sorry. But his best stat was that his plus-minus was the best on the starting lineup. He was a plus 12.
Strong.
Yeah. Yeah, and as good of a game as Clint Capella had, he was actually a minus 11 with his plus-minus rating, which kind of threw me off when I saw it. I thought he was a plus 11, and I kept looking at it like, no, he was actually a minus 11.
24-18, and you come off as a minus 11. Plus, ugh. I mean, I don't love plus minus as a stat.
I don't either. I really don't.
It's not as scientific as some of the other advanced statistics, but it can be a very good indicator, especially over the course of a full season. Individual games, I don't know that it's necessarily all that.
I don't like how inaccurate it is, because when you look at his stat line and just the eyeball test over his 38 minutes of action, you would think that Clint Capella would clearly be a plus in the plus-minus rating. The fact that he wasn't, it kind of boggles the mind.
Well,
so.
Considering his direct competition was Al Horford, who only had 15-4 for the game.
Exactly.
It's pretty surprising to see, but it is what it is. I mean, the stat is what it is. The whole point is when he was in the game, the Rockets were minus 11 last night. When he wasn't in the game, they were plus 18. Was that?
Roughly something like that. The whole thing about it is that this team is starting to play well, and they're playing well without Chris Paul. I'm really hoping Chris Paul gets healthy, take the time that he needs, but if this team is going to keep playing like this, they'll be in strong contention to definitely move up that playoff ladder in the Western Conference.
I think they can find themselves in a place that they keep playing well through the All-Star break and get some healthy people back. They can find themselves hosting a home playoff series, at least one. I mean, look at how log, look at how logjammed the West is. It's not they win three games in a row and a couple key losses, and they find themselves in fourth anyway.
This is true. We'll have some more Rockets talk, get into some Texans talk and injury news and whatnot on the other side of this break here on 97.5 and Sports Map 94.1. A state that's untouchable like Elliot Ness. The track hits your eardrum like a to your chest. Like a vest for your in the city of we in that sunshine state where the bomb be.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Welcome back to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. I'm Jermaine Every. That's Craig Koshkin. Andrew Carlson on the boards. We're filling in for John Lance and Dell. So we talked the Rockets in the first couple of segments off the big 127-113 victory over the Boston Celtics last night, which I personally think is a really good win because the Celtics are a really good team. They've been having their ups and downs this year, but that was still a good win over a good team, a team that's expected to contend for the Eastern Conference Championship. Before we dig into Texans, We touched on it in the last segment of yesterday. Fred Fowler put out his top 10 Houston athletes of 2018 on sportsmap.com. Please go visit houston.sportsmap.com. There's a ton of good content on there every single day that they're pumping out. We played the guessing game. Craig, went 8 for 8 to start off the list.
And then blew the whole thing.
But, hey, If you went 8 out of 10 from the free throw line, you're an 80% free throw shooter.
Not bad at all. I was happy with my 8 for 8 performance. I was never going to go 10 for 10 with De'Aaron King on there. I was thinking professional only, but I guess I should have got Clowney.
Yeah, that was the one that I was kind of shocked that you didn't get. I was like,
my perception of Clowney's production is much lower than what his actual production is.
Yeah, and when I look at Clowney, because I tend to watch the game like a little bit from football nerd mode sometimes, I see a lot of the things that he does that a lot of people get enamored about that maybe other people aren't really like paying attention to or they don't really see or whatever it is. But a lot of the times the stuff that he's allowed to do or that he's capable of doing that they have him do while he's playing. For example, one of my favorite plays with Jadeveon Clowney is when they put him in that sort of middle linebacker position, and he hovers between the two guards over the center, and he just finds a gap to shoot and blows the play up.
And Jadeveon Clowney is an explosive player and can make a big difference on the Texans at times. My problem with him and why I would never pay him the money he's probably going to garner on the open market if they don't franchise tag him is that he takes plays off. We talked about this right after the show yesterday because it was just kind of fresh. When there's a running play to the opposite side of the line and he kind of gets stoned on the first attempt, he's not really chasing down the play on the backside, whereas other players would keep chasing down the play until the whistle.
Yeah, he doesn't do that as often and as consistent as you would like to see him do it.
Exactly.
And so it ends up being a negative, you know, when it could have been more of a positive. One of the other, like you said, you mentioned it a little while ago, but one anomaly on the list was De'Aaron King. And I know for a fact that some people had an issue with Fred having him one spot ahead of Deshaun Watson.
I mean, yeah, I guess. I mean, sure, I get that. De'Aaron King didn't win a Heisman. He didn't win a conference title. He didn't win his bowl game. So, yeah, I could see why you'd have a problem with that.
But at the same time, you got to think about it. The kid was responsible for 50 touchdowns.
He was amazing. He was great all year. I can see why Fred put him there. I can see why people would be upset with that. First of all, it's an article. You shouldn't be upset about it. But if you're going to get upset, I understand why.
Yeah, I just... I like his ranking on the list, and I can see why he would be ranked slightly ahead of Deshaun Watson simply because of what he did. One of the other guys that I thought could have made a run for the only ones that I really had like a slight issue with was Alex Bregman being three and DeAndre Hopkins being two. I thought it should have been flip-flopped.
I mean, I would almost consider Alex Bregman kind of becoming one of the faces of Major League Baseball in the way he operated. I would have considered him at one. Now, James Harden won an MVP. He almost led the Rockets to a finals. Certainly well-deserving, but I could see Bregman being one. Like I could make a case for it.
Right. I understand. I see where you're going with that. I was about to chop you at the knees, but when you said I could make a case, I was like, okay, I see where he's going with this one. But yeah, the way he hit, you could argue that he had a much better season than Altuve had last season. If I was going to pick an Astros team MVP, it would probably have been Alex Bregman, simply because of the way he improved. Not only he had good power numbers, but I mean, he had one of those 300, 30, 100, 100 seasons where he had 100 RBIs, 100 runs scored, hit 30 home runs, and hit right at almost 300, if I'm not mistaken.
That's pretty good for those of you who aren't well-versed in baseball. That's a pretty good season.
Really good. I want to say Jeff Bagwell did it like 6, 7, or 8 times, and a 100-100 season, I'm sorry.
Where's Jeff Bagwell after his career? Did he go to something called the Hall of Fame?
He sure did.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Lance Berkman, I want to say, had a 100-100 season 4 or 5 times here in a Houston Astros uniform. So we're talking about he had a historic season as far as runs scored and runs batted in, not to mention his power numbers and his average that went up. One of the guys that was on this list, and I think it was mainly simply because of what he did this year coming back off of injury, was J.J. Watt at 5.
Had he not had the year he's had, and he's had a great year coming off that injury, especially started off very strong. I mean, there could have been a fear in September that he wouldn't even belong anywhere near the list.
Yeah.
Considering we didn't know what to expect from him coming back.
Right. There was a time where, I'm not going to lie, I'll admit it, I was one of the people who thought, you know, show he's healthy, trade him, get what you can get for him. The guy, I don't think he'll ever be the same player he once was. I am so glad to have been proven wrong this year. I'm really happy to be proven wrong. Clowney, on the other hand, I still waffle back and forth a little bit, but honestly, if you can get anything of significance for him, I'm still kind of the thought you should trade him instead of bringing him back, but
it has to be very specific significance. It's got to be defensive back help. It's got to be offensive line help.
Yeah, and I mean a good player and maybe like a mid-round pick.
But if they franchise tag him, because his contract is up after this year, if they do tag him, they're going to tag him without, in my opinion, they're going to tag him without any real effort to sign him to a long-term deal. It's going to be a more, you're going to get paid this year, kind of like a fifth-year option gets you paid. But we're still seeing
how much we should
extend you, if we should at all. I don't think he'll get the franchise tag twice. I think after next season, should they tag him, they're going to either let him walk or choose to sign him to a long-term deal. As of right now, I'd let him walk.
Here's my dream scenario with Clowney. They franchise tag him. There is a coach on the West Coast who has a man crush on Clowney and who has for years. He has multiple draft picks. He's been known to do stupid things as well.
John Gruden?
Of course.
If you could get any number of those first round draft picks, specifically their first round draft pick, yes.
I mean, it's worth it. It's definitely worth it, because with the number of holes that this team has, as much as I love Jadeveon Clowney, you have tradable pieces. And if you have a tradable piece like a Clowney, especially showing what J.J. Watt showed, that he could come back and he can be disruptive.
Well, you know, John Gruden has said he needs a pass rusher.
He traded one of the best ones in the league.
I know.
I mean,
and then had the nerve to say we could really use a pass rusher.
You know, but part of that also has to do with how cash-strapped the Raiders are. We'd love to get you guys' thoughts on any of these topics that we've been talking about. So, like I said before, you can call in on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. That's 713-780-3776. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm at @_Jermaine. That's JERMAINE. He's at @C_Kosh. Beautiful Andrew, what is your Twitter handle, just in case the people want to harass you?
If y'all want to harass me, you can find me at @HypedUpAndrew.
There you go. Hyped Up Andrew. Did you make that Twitter handle when you were still in high school?
No. When I came to the station, I had a Twitter handle that was something along the lines of like acarlson282.
Very like generic.
Very generic, like machine spit it out sort of name.
Okay.
And then Raheel was like, we need to change this.
Raheel was very correct. Raheel did well by you on that. So good for him and good for you for changing it. But okay. Hyped Up Andrew. It just made me think, like, you and I are old enough to know that we have at least one AIM screen name sitting out there in the ether that you'd be embarrassed to tell people what it was.
Oh, I can't even remember mine.
And I will keep it as a secret till I'm going to my grave with it. It was so bad.
Yeah, I have one that I do remember, and it was just like, it was...
I'm going to my grave with it. We're not going to have a segment of, hey, tell us yours and we'll tell you ours. Nope.
Not happening. All right, we'll be right back on the bench on ESPN 97.5 and Sports Map 94.1.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Welcome back to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. I'm Jermaine Every. That's Craig Koshkin, Andrew Carlson on the boards, filling in for John Lance and Dell. Guys, we ended the last segment going over some of the minutia of Fred's top 10 Houston sports athletes of 2018 list. And we got really heavy into the Texans. So I want to transition into Texans talk, because your Houston Texans are playing the Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday. If they win that game, they win the division.
This is true.
If they lose that game, the Tennessee Titans or the Indianapolis Colts could be playing Sunday night for a chance at winning the division, which would also end up dropping the Texans to, I believe, the sixth seed? The fifth seed? No, the fifth seed, I believe. It'll be the fifth seed. Because I want to say whoever with that AFC North mumble jumble, one of those teams would end up being the sixth seed. Do you actually think the Texans have a legit shot of dropping this game to the Jaguars?
I think anytime there's a division game, there's a legitimate chance. Do I think the Texans, obviously the Texans are favored by the spread. They should be favored. They're the better team. The Jaguars have been a disaster. And from a chemistry standpoint, they haven't been anywhere near what they were the year before. I'd love to hear Jalen Ramsey's thoughts on Blake Bortles now.
I bet they're dramatically different.
But that being said, I expect the Texans to win. It would be a little bit more than a mild shock if the Jaguars were to come in, not make it a game. I could see it being close, but it would be a mild shock if the Jaguars won in Houston when their season's over, they have nothing to play for, and the Texans can secure the division.
I think the MVP of this game for the Texans has a high chance to be Blake Bortles. I really do, because he hasn't proved to say why they shouldn't have benched him. He's done really nothing in his return to active duty to say, hey, you know what, this is my job, other than the word that came out from the huddles, hey, let's get this together, I'm back, boys, or something like that he said in the huddle when he got back in the game the other week. I could see him clearly throwing about two, maybe three picks because he's getting pressured and turning the ball over like he normally does and basically gifting the Texans a win.
Yeah, oh, without a doubt. So, I mean, Blake Bortles is exactly who we thought he was last year, except he took care of the ball a little better. A little better. Not like some fantastic number better, just a little bit better. Again, the Texans are favored. It should be high energy considering they've had opportunities to close out the division pretty much all month and haven't really taken advantage.
Here's another thing that I'm looking at in this game. DeAndre Hopkins is 75 yards away from a 1,500-yard season. Lamar Miller is also 83 yards away from a 1,000-yard season. Just some statistical numbers to see if those guys hit those marks, which are pretty good marks for a running back and a wide receiver. Also, I'm looking to see at what point would Bill O'Brien possibly pull guys if they have what kind of lead. What kind of lead do you think they need to have, and at what point in the game for Bill O'Brien to say, hey, you know what?
I mean, super super conservative Bill O'Brien to pull starters? I think they need to be up 28 to start pulling starters.
What point in the game? Halftime?
No, not halftime. Up 28 midway through the third quarter. I think he might start pulling people. Into the third for sure with a 4-touchdown lead, he would start pulling starters and playing reserves. But here's what, they're never going to jump out to a 28-point lead.
I don't think so either.
Because Bill O'Brien might get a 14-point lead with 10 minutes to go in the second quarter, and then he's just going to run it three times and punt.
Yeah, for sure.
Because that's what he does.
For sure. I mean, he does that right now, and sometimes they don't even have a 14-point lead. I would say it would have to be at least double digits, 10 or more, somewhere near the fourth quarter. And I think that even if he doesn't pull starters, he'll definitely dial it back in 3 yards, cloud of dust, kick the ball, make him go the length of the field. I think that's what will end up happening more often than, you know what, let's go ahead and you know, just pull people actually from the game. I'm interested to see who would be the first person he actually pulls from the game. And truly, it needs to be Deshaun Watson. If he's going to pull anybody at any point in time and just take them completely out of the game, I would say Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. But can you even pull DeAndre Hopkins off the field with the numbers at wide receiver right now?
I would say yes, because I wouldn't want to get my most valuable wide receiver.
No, I mean, do they have the numbers to put a full team of wide receivers on the field without DeAndre Hopkins?
Screw the wide receivers. I'd go two tight ends.
Two tight ends.
Hell yeah. That's fair. Yeah.
It's kind of a joke about the Texans' injury status.
Speaking of the injury status, the injury report from yesterday was out. There were a number of guys who were limited participants in Thursday's practice. We had Kiki Kuti, Brandon Dunn, Andre Howe, DeAndre Hopkins, Kareem Jackson, Jonathan Joseph, Bernardrick McKinney, and J.J. Watt. Of all those guys who are limited participants for one reason or another, I would say guys like Watt, Hopkins, well, maybe not Hopkins, but Watt, Howe, I think those are maybe the only two guys that they may have limited just because. I think the other guys are all legit, like, trying to recover, and they're actually, you know, holding them out. Bunch of guys listed on the injury report but were full participants. One of them that's been listed on the injury report was a full participant Wednesday and Thursday at practice. Key guy on the offensive line is what I'm wondering, is he going to actually play this week? Senio Calabete. I don't recall seeing him out there the last couple of weeks. Correct me if I'm wrong, somebody. Maybe he was, and I just wasn't paying attention. But
I haven't seen him.
I haven't seen him out there playing. And for more often than not, I've seen him on the sideline. He's been dressed, but he hasn't played. So the injuries along that offensive line, he was a full participant. So was Zach Fulton. And Greg Mance was also a full participant, guys that are injured on that offensive line. So it'd be interesting to see if any of those guys get any significant playing time. Fulton, I think, will. Calamete and Mance are the two that I'm wondering if they'll get any playing time in this game. which if you've had a banged up offensive line, these guys are coming off of injury. You're going to make the playoffs. You're just looking at what seed you're going to make. Do you get those guys in there and get them some work? Or do you let them rest and take your chances with their first live action?
If you feel like they're functional enough to play, they're healthy enough to play, I think you have to get them a little work.
I think so, too.
Especially with as porous as the offensive line has been at times. Now, there have been during that nine-game winning stretch, they played above their head for a very long time, and you could see marked improvement from week to week.
For sure.
But they've regressed a little bit over the last three, 4 weeks. So any numbers you can put as far as bodies on that line and get them back into game shape, I guess. I mean, I don't really want to say game shape, but it's like get their reps. If they're healthy enough to take reps, especially if they're taking full contact reps in practice at all, you've got to get them game time before the playoffs.
Here's my thing. On the offensive line, chemistry is hugely important.
That too.
Having the same consistent five guys starting and playing next to each other for communication and chemistry is huge. Because when you're dealing with shifting the pocket, moving the pocket, picking up on the blitz, you know, passing guys off that you know, play the line game or the stunts, different things like that, you have to be aware of what the next guy to you is doing. So communication and chemistry is key, and getting those five starters to play cohesively moving into the playoffs is going to be huge for their playoff success. It
might be the most important thing they can do.
Yeah, yeah.
Other than get healthy at every position.
Which I don't think is going to happen because at this time of the season, everybody's playing hurt. Everybody's playing hurt. It's just a matter of what percentage of full go are you at this point in the season. So, I mean, that's something to be looked at going forward. One thing that I do not want to see is one thing that I wrote in an article a couple weeks ago. Believe it was against, gosh, I can't remember the game, but they dropped DJ Reader in the coverage a couple times, and it cost them big.
Yep.
And there was one play specifically in the red zone. He dropped back into a short zone. Believe it was against the Jets, maybe. And
I think T.Y. Hilton just caught another pass against the Texans secondary.
Oh my God. But he drops back in the coverage, and he's you know, DJ Reader's 350 pounds. So he's not the most agile guy to drop back in space and cover anybody.
Like, if we're gonna do the zone blitz thing, which is fine, drop Jadeveon Black back in coverage.
Thank you.
Someone who can move. Even drop J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt has dropped back in coverage on exotic blitz schemes plenty of times. We've seen him defend passes and look good in space, make tackles in the flat. We've seen him do that type of stuff. Don't put 350-pound defensive tackle back in coverage.
It cost him a touchdown in one of those games specifically.
Let him occupy two blockers so everyone else can get to the quarterback.
Exactly. Let the big boys eat. We'll be right back on the bench. This is ESPN 97.5 and Sports Map 94.1.
ESPN 97.5.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.